Well, thanks everybody for joining the monthly call. I appreciate your time being here. And again, just want to give people a few extra minutes to get used to the webinar format. If you are connecting by phone call and not webinar, the handouts came out yesterday at about 5. You could follow along with those. I will be posting the handouts on the screen so that you'll be able to follow along. All right. So today's call, as I mentioned last month, is a review of the changes that we'll be making to the Approved Provider Education Activity Record form. And that's the form for those of you that are newer or brand new. That's the form where you need to record your planning as you plan continuing nursing education activities. I know some people have had the question, when are we supposed to fill these out? Or sometimes we'll get forms with an application for renewal that are filled out after the fact. But this really needs to be filled out as you are doing your planning and then kept with your activity record. The first thing I wanted to share is the 2015 Approved Provider Activity File requirements. We are also putting these at the end of the activity record. They aren't on the version that you received. There used to be a checklist of items that needed to be in the activity record, and that was removed a couple of years ago, and we've had feedback that that was helpful. So we will be putting this back on the activity record form in the format of a checklist so that you can check off that you have all the items that are required. One of the reasons for going over the form today is that for whatever reason, WNA, CEAP, the Continuing Education Approval Program Committee, has always required just a little bit more than ANCC. And what we want to do is align with ANCC so that all states are consistent across the board and that we're all asking for the same thing. And WNA is not the only State Nurses Association that had some extra requirements. There were a surprising number of states that do ask certain things that are important to them or that their committee felt would be important. And so now the effort is to align everybody and to make sure that we're all asking for the same thing. This should result in a little bit of simplification of the activity record form. There are a couple of changes that I think that you're really going to like. In fact, I think you'll probably like many of the changes, and there really aren't all that many. So this isn't like another big set of criteria changes that you have to follow. This is kind of tweaking what we already are doing and trying to make it more standardized, streamlined, and simpler for you. So that said, you will have the list of the provider activity file requirements at the end of the approved provider education activity record form. And this list comes straight from ANCC, and I'm just kind of scrolling through it quickly. Areas that are gray on this list are items that go with the large bullet above. So we're assuming if you have conflict of interest documentation, all of these things are included because they are included in the conflict of interest form. The same thing with commercial support agreement. All of the items listed here, if you're using the WNA commercial support agreement, then you already have all those items taken care of. If you're using a different commercial support agreement, if you're an organization that accepts commercial support, you would need to compare your agreement against the list here of the items in gray to make sure that your agreement that you're using covers all of these areas. So that is applicable to organizations that accept commercial support. and use a different agreement, which is very few, but there are some. So the take home from this is you now have the list in front of you, and you will have it for reference now in the activity record form of everything that needs to be in the record. And don't forget the summative evaluation. That is a piece that people sometimes forget to send in. When you renew your provider status every 3 years and you send in 3 sample activity records, that's one of the pieces that is most often missing. So be sure that with your activity record, you're keeping your results of your aggregate evaluation data. So that is new, and hopefully that will be helpful to you. Okay. I'm going to walk through the changes to the Approved Provider Education Activity Record. And the WNAC committee has reviewed the changes. This form will be finalized and on the WNA website by July 31st. And so if you are planning, if you start planning an activity after July 31st, that's the time to start using this form. But since our call is scheduled for now and it's difficult for people when we change call times, I wanted to go ahead and introduce you to this. I think we had kind of an overlap period last time when we introduced the new criteria, and everybody did really well with that. So there's some minor changes here, and what you're seeing is exactly what the WNAC committee saw when they reviewed this. And when I thought about how to best communicate the changes to you, it occurred to me that just sending you the document and track changes might be one of the best ways. So I hope that you'll be able to really clearly see what's different. Small difference. We added the number of contact hours that one participant can earn and the total number of contact hours available. So if you have concurrent sessions or breakouts, that number of total contact hours might be different than the number that your participants can earn, because they can't be at 2 breakout sessions at once. And this will help streamline some WNA processes when we process applications. Same thing for enduring material. And if you have questions on how to calculate those, let me know. Because if you haven't been a primary nurse planner or a nurse planner very long, and you haven't, if you haven't had to calculate the 2 different numbers, it can be a little bit confusing at first. So just let me know, and we can walk through it. The same goes for enduring materials, although normally those numbers are the same that one participant can earn for an enduring material, and the total number of contact hours. And then there was a big section under blended learning, and we just took that out for simplicity. And if you have a blended learning material, so if you have live and enduring parts to one activity, you just complete the live and the enduring material portion of the form. So complete live event if you have a live event, complete enduring material if you have an enduring material, and complete both of these if you have blended learning. All right. And then there's just some notes here. There are some organizations that do live activities, such as a webinar, and then post them on a website to create enduring materials. And there's just a reference here, since there's not a ton of organizations that do that. There's just a note here, if you do a webinar that's live and you want to make that into an enduring material, you can just read the notes here. And the changes are basically just grammatical. All right, joint providership. was the activity jointly provided? He's going to answer that. You no longer need a joint provider agreement. And that's one of the things that is very new, but there is no longer a joint provider agreement required. What is required, and this hasn't changed, but I want to emphasize it, is if you're jointly providing, so if you are sitting at another at the table planning with another organization, there has to be a statement on your promotional material that says that you as a provider are providing the nursing contact hours and a joint provider agreement with, and then the names of the other organization. So that came into being with the 2015 criteria, as that has been the case for the past year. And so it's not new, but it's one thing that's getting missed a lot, so I did want to emphasize that for you, that jointly provide. So biggest change here is there's no longer a joint provider agreement required. As an organization, in my other hat, as a primary nurse planner for MediStar, we jointly provide many activities, and I will probably continue to do joint provider agreements for other reasons, for business reasons, and to help me keep track of who's doing what. So the form will still be out there on the website. If you want to use the agreement, you're more than welcome to. When you send in your three sample activity records, when you providership every 3 years, we will not be looking for a joint provider agreement. Okay. All right. Under educational development, there's just some clarifications here, and we've looked at what are some of the problems that we see frequently. And most people are getting the hang of summarizing the professional practice gap and thinking about CNE needs to address problems in practice. The current state people are doing fairly well with, and I hope that this will be helpful. We added the question, what is happening that creates a need for this activity? So when we talk about the current state, we're talking about what is happening now that leads you to be doing this education. So hopefully that will be a helpful trigger. Desired state, one of the things that is missing here is how you know that, or how you believe that your education will lead to improvement. So what should nurses be doing in practice that will lead to improvement? And that includes just a quick description of why is the problem happening and how do you know that it could get better. So you have currently you're not achieving the outcomes you want, maybe you're not hitting QI targets, maybe your CAP scores are low. They could be one of many things. The things that are listed here are just examples. But under the desired state, please give us some information about what should be happening that will result in an improvement, because that's where your education should be directed. And then why is that problem happening and how you know it could be better? Because that's also going to drive that why the problem is happening should be driving your education. Okay. I highlighted the attach a copy of the supporting evidence. So that it has not changed. That's one of the things we're asked most frequently is, do I really need to include, if I click on survey of stakeholders, to valid as saying that's how I've got the data to examine a practice gap? The question is, do we really have to put the survey results in there? Do we really have to put in these items? And the answer is still yes. So that hasn't changed at all. Whatever method of evidence gathering that you're using to validate your practice gap, you still need to check what that is. and you still need to attach a copy of the supporting evidence. And that should be fairly easy to do because something is validating that you're on the right track. You're not just holding the education because you think it needs to be done. You're holding it for a reason, and there's something, data, literature, something out there is going to validate you're on the right track. You've got a hunch, and there is some sort of evidence to say, yes, this is a problem. Okay. All right. What are the learning outcomes for the activity? This is one area that people are struggling because it used to be what is the purpose of the activity. And since we no longer drive education off of objectives, people are having kind of a struggle of how to write learning outcomes or how to even think about learning outcomes. The other piece I think that's difficult for people is that your outcomes really have to be measured. So whatever your outcome or outcome is for your activity, you do need to state how you're going to measure that, whether it is on a written evaluation or something that participants are demonstrating or some method of measuring learner engagement. You really do need to measure the learning outcome or outcomes. And there is a handout, I believe it's on the WNA website, and you've all gotten it previous to other calls about learner outcomes. Megan and I are meeting next week to talk about the website and getting all the new information up, so I know that this will be out there. But do take a look when you're doing your activity record forms and looking at what is it that we want our participants to accomplish when they attend this. Do look at the handout to see how that these should be written. And I think one of the reasons is because it's new is this is an area also that we're seeing is people are still, I think, struggling with objectives and outcomes. And I think the ANCC handout that's on the website does a really good job of explaining the difference. I think we've talked about it also on a call, but it continues to be a challenge. And so if you are having challenges identifying learning outcomes, let me know and we can talk through it. Okay. What content will you develop to help learners achieve the learning outcome? So this is a big difference between the old education activity record form and the new record form. And this question comes right off the ANCC template. So what we need is a short paragraph on basically what will the activity look like? What will you include in the content? And I put an example here so you can get the hang of what we're looking for. And hopefully that example will help. The reason for that question is educational planning tables will now be optional. So the educational planning tables that have the columns for the main points and the content and the instructors and the teaching methods are no longer required. They are an optional part of your record. I know that some people on our committee at WNA indicated they will still use theirs because it's a good way to communicate with their instructors of their sessions, and you're certainly welcome to use it. But educational planning tables will no longer be required, and instead you'll need to fill out letter I, the content you'll use to help learners achieve their learning outcomes. Okay. You still have evidence-based references. This comes off the planning table since it's no longer required, but one of the things on the ANCC list is evidence-based references. our description of the evidence-based content with supporting references or resource. So letter I is your description of your content, and J is your supporting resources. So that meets the requirement for ANCC. Okay. So again, when we change this, there will not be anything that says to attach an educational planning table. All right. For learning engagement strategies, we just added an example, some ideas, and people have been doing fairly well with that, but there's just some ideas that we've gathered from people. Letter L, how we measure learning outcomes, we took out because it's really stated in one of the questions above. I think it's the old page. In any case, yes, what are the learning outcomes for the activity and how are they measured? We found that it was really difficult for people to answer letter L sometimes because it seemed to be repeating letter H. So that's out now. So we made that change based on your feedback. Your learning outcomes are related to nursing professional development or patient outcomes or both. Just added a note here that if your outcomes are related to patient outcomes, your learning outcomes are related to patient outcomes, you need to have data on patient outcomes. So if you don't have data on patient outcomes, I would say that most learning outcomes are going to be related to nursing professional development. Okay, commercial support is the same. There's nothing that's changed about that. For awarding contact hours, there's still an area to indicate what your successful completion requirements are. And there is a place now specifically for contact hour calculation for a live activity and for an enduring material activity. Okay. You're still required to attach an agenda for the activity. If you're awarding partial attendance, you need to complete the contact hour calculation form. That's been around since I've been around, so that form is quite old. Attaching your certificate, again, it says what the certificate needs to include. Attaching a copy of the post-test, if that is applicable. A lot of times it is not. Okay, one of the other biggest changes is the required information provided to learners. W&A, and we had indicated this when we rolled out the 2015 criteria, we had indicated which items were W&A specific, and those will be removed. So your promotional material will include, of course, your name, your approval statement, and if applicable, your joint provider statement. So target audience is no longer required on your promotional material. I'm going to continue to include it, but it's not required. Learner outcomes are not required. And presenter author names and credentials are not required. There's some good reasons to continue using these, especially the target audience. Well, actually all three of these, but when you submit your sample activities every 3 years with your application renewal, we will not be looking for target audience, learner outcomes, or presenter names and credentials on your promotional material as of August 1st, 2017. Okay. And I actually kept this section divided into promotional materials and disclosures because that's the way we think and talk about it. Your disclosures can be made anytime before the session. They can be made right before the session on a PowerPoint or handout or a poster. Or These could be included if you know them in your promotional material. So they just have to be all of the items in A and B promotional material and disclosures. Each of those items needs to be shared with the participants at least once in your promotional materials and or disclosures. So if you have your criteria for awarding contact hours, so what are the successful completion requirements? If you have that in your promotional material already, you don't have to repeat it right before the session. So A and B, you need to share with the participants prior to the activity. Criteria for awarding contact hours, that hasn't changed. Presence or absence of conflicts of interest, that has definitely not changed. Commercial support has not changed. Please do not use logos of commercial support organizations. And for enduring materials only, the date that the contact hours won't be offered anymore. And we're still asking you to attach a copy of promotional materials, and we have indicated to please include a copy of each kind. So if you've got a brochure and a website listing, put both of those in your activity file. Right, and then evidence of disclosures provided to learners would be the same as it always has been. A copy of that handout or a screen print of your disclosure slide, make sure that's in the activity record form. The evaluation strategies, and this is not new. This changed with the 2015 criteria when we rolled it out last year. The only thing you're required to evaluate is that there was there was an assessment made of a change in knowledge, skill, or practice. And so that could be a question on your evaluation. Do you intend to use this knowledge and practice, yes or no? If yes, how? If no, what are the barriers? That would be a minimum of how to assess that. If you're not doing a written evaluation, you would still need to evaluate the activity to show evidence that knowledge, skills, or practice was assessed. So if you're doing a skills lab, that might mean if you don't have a written evaluation, that you would be monitoring a return demonstration of skills. So evaluation is required. You need to, at a minimum, evaluate and be able to show evidence that there was a change in knowledge, skills, or practice as a result of participating in the activity. And you can use whatever evaluation strategy is most appropriate for your course. So that has not changed. There's some good reasons to ask some other questions, like, did you gain additional knowledge from this activity in the content area? We still ask, in my other hat at MetaStar, we will continue to ask questions about conflict of interest disclosure and some other questions because we track those for CME as well. So we will, at MetaStar, have still a written evaluation and continue to ask some of the questions that we always have. We'll continue to ask about instructors and that type of thing because that information is helpful to us. But as a requirement to meet the criteria, you are only required to show evidence that there's a change in knowledge, skills, or practice. And here's where that summative evaluation is required, so don't forget that. Long-term evaluation, provider units should be doing long-term evaluation. We've been trying to ease you into this, And as a provider, that's one of the things that sets you apart from organizations that apply for contact hours on an individual activity basis, is as a provider, you need to be thinking long term, how do I know that this activity really made an impact? So we'll probably later this fall go back to long-term evaluation and talk more about that. For now, we have asked that if you design an activity for a change in practice, or if your activity is related to your organizational initiatives or your strategic plan, to start there with long-term evaluation. If you've never done long-term evaluation, that's a great place to start, because those are the activities that would hopefully make the biggest impact. Activities that are designed to change practice or that are related to the bigger picture. So for now, you could put NA for certain activities for long-term evaluation, because we're trying to ease providers, still trying to ease providers into that process. Okay. We took the reflection out to, you still have to indicate your method of how you will do long-term evaluation, but you do not have to record the results of that long-term evaluation. So the reflection will come out. All right. There is, under content integrity, the thought here is that providers are able to vet their own planners and instructors, authors or speakers, and will no longer be asking how you ensure that your speakers and planners and authors, etc., are qualified. So this will disappear. All right. We'll still ask you how the planning committee ensures content integrity, so this question doesn't change. This is just some cleanup. Hang on one sec. Okay. You'll still need to attach a conflict of interest disclosure for all your planners, authors, and faculty. And you will still need to include the biographical information for your nurse planner for the activities and for someone who is identified as a content expert. See, the other thing that we added here is that, and you all know this, there must be a qualified nurse planner actively involved and responsible for the criteria, and that at least one content expert, and we're trying to move that language to subject matter expert, is required for the activity. And we put the definition of a content reviewer here because this is one of the concepts that was new with the 2015 criteria that I think if I had to pick one thing people have trouble with, this would be it. So a content reviewer, not a content expert, a content reviewer is somebody outside of the planning committee that the nurse planner calls in to review a presentation for accuracy, scientific integrity, and or bias. And a content reviewer is not required. So you may have the nurse planner and you may have a content expert on your planning committee. Maybe the content of the presentation is beyond the content expert's ability to evaluate that. So if you feel like you need a content reviewer, and that's up to the nurse planner and primary nurse planner, if you feel like you need a content reviewer to ensure that a speaker's information is accurate and scientific and without bias, you can call somebody in that has that level of expertise in the content area. But a content reviewer is not required. Right? We did need to add, when you list out the planning committee and indicate the individual's role, we did need to add a column, does this person have a conflict of interest? That is on the ANCC application, so we re-added that. And one thing that people miss a lot that might not seem very important, I think you guys know I don't worry about checking the boxes, but this is important as far as checking the box. To indicate who your content experts are, because then we'll know to look for a biographical data form for those people. So again, this part isn't new. As of the 2015 criteria rolled out last year, the only people that need a biographical data form in the activity record would be your nurse planner and anyone on the planning committee that's a content expert. I may add that in here just as a reminder. And then the same thing, completing the table for your presenters or authors. And the table broke here, but this is just a draft, so we'll fix the formatting. And does the person have a conflict of interest? So we needed to add that. And then we'll make a checklist out of the activity file requirement. Okay, and I need to show you one other change that we need to do, and this one won't make your life easier, but it is consistent with what ANCC wants to see and the evidence that we need to have in your records for your activities, and it's just going back to the old way that we did this. So for your biographical data form, if you are the nurse planner, and remember, only designate one person to be the nurse planner for your activity, even if you have three people from your provider unit, if you're lucky to have three nurse planners or you have a big provider unit, you need to designate one of those people to be responsible for the criteria. So if you are the nurse planner or primary nurse planner, when you get to the end of this section, we will need the license number and the state and expiration for the nurse planner who is putting together the activity or leading the activity. And then does the nurse planner hold a BSN or BAN? The only answer is yes. because your nurse planner has to hold a BSN or a BAN. So I knew you wouldn't be too excited about seeing that. I wasn't too excited to put it back on there, but it really does provide the information that's needed. So that is that. So I will take any questions if anybody has any. And if not, that's okay.
Mary Kay?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Kelly from Munson.
Yeah.
I had a question on the activity record on page 5 where it says, it looks like now we do not count evaluation time when we're calculating contact hours.
That could be an oversight. Hang on.
It says, do not count welcome, housekeeping, breaks, or lunch. Oh, I'm sorry. It says, do count in the initial. Okay, sorry. My bad.
No, actually, that's really good feedback. I'm going to move that down to the next line, and we'll emphasize it a little bit more. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay, thanks. Sorry.
No, thank you.
Mary Kay?
Yeah.
On the biographical data form, you're saying that only the nurse planner and a content expert needs to fill that out. So can you get rid of all the other checks then? Like presenter author no longer needs that, it sounds like, or we don't even need to collect CVs. That may be how we go about doing it, but we don't need to actually have those in the file, correct?
Correct, and that is an interesting question because we use this form both for providers and for individual activity applicants. So maybe there's a way that we could modify this so that it was clearer for providers. Thank you for that. I'm trying
try to complete a form and they look at that and they think, oh, so do I need it for a presenter?
Yeah, who am I? Yeah. All right. Oops, and I will also add in there, and I apologize if this wasn't clear, you would need one for a content reviewer as well, and I'll make sure that that's clear in the application. We don't use content reviewers very much, so I always forget about them. So nurse planner, content expert, and if you use content reviewers, I don't know of many providers that do, maybe on occasion. We can take a look at the, I'm just writing this down, we can take a look at it and see if there's some differences that we can make. One of the issues was when we rolled out the 2015 criteria, we were trying to streamline forms because we used to have a bio form for the nurse planner and one for everybody else, and wanted to streamline those, but we can definitely take a look at that. Thanks for suggesting it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But anything else right now?
Hello?
Yeah.
Hi, I have a question on that form as well, because it says check that all that apply, and people will check primary nurse planner when they're not the primary nurse planner,
they're
CNE planner, and then they'll check CNE planner, should they do planning committee member as well, or I know there's just one that's responsible for the activity, so the others that are not responsible, but they are planners that are on the list I send to you, they would just be the planning committee member. So
right.
Do you need to have check all that apply there?
Well, I think we're going to rework this section to make it clearer. Good question.
Hi, this is Janet Revolinsky from Aurora Healthcare. I have a question about the long-term evaluation. How do others do it, or any suggestions for enduring material, or would those not be applicable for long-term evaluation?
Great question, and it would be applicable for long-term evaluation. Again, you can start with activities that are related to organizational initiatives or the activities that you feel you really want to make an impact. I know that's all of them, but the ones that you feel are extra important. We don't do, in my other hat, we don't do a lot of enduring materials. Is there anybody out there on the call that does enduring materials quite a bit?
The question is when you're looking, and people can take that any day of, the next 3 months or 8 months, at what point would you look at your long-term evaluation? Because somebody could have just done it the day before, and you might, how would you not capture that versus giving them some time to apply the information?
Is anybody out there doing enduring materials that is doing long-term evaluation? Let's start there. Okay. Then I'm going to say that it really, it depends on how your system captures data and how easy or how difficult it is to go back and divide that data. You know, I think probably the best, and I'm just kind of thinking this through out loud because we don't do it in my other hat, but even if you went by quarter or every 6 months, you're still going to catch people that have recently completed it. So I think it would be a matter of looking in your system and seeing, is there an easy way to figure out who has recently completed that?
And correct, that's helpful. And then how often do you just ongoingly do it? Every 3 months? Is that what people are doing if they're collecting long-term on their enduring?
It sounds like enduring materials and long-term evaluation, from what I'm not hearing from responses from people, it sounds like maybe that is an area that might be challenging for people.
Okay.
So what I'll do is on my next call, when the nurse peer review leaders meet to talk with ANCC leaders, I'll bring that up.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the question.
I have one comment on that. We're starting to do that, but we haven't collected enough time. Has it passed to collect how long on the enduring? But if you have a learning management system, you could collect the data from that if they're taking the eval on that.
Yeah, some systems have a way that you can set up something to auto-generate, you know, 60 days later or that type of thing. It really depends on the system. So,
or you have audits where people responsible on the unit go and, you know, pull charts, assessments, you know, wound care group and a pain group and a diabetes group. And people go and see that the things that they hope to achieve is still occurring.
Good. Depending on what kind of setting you're in, that might be a good way to do that. Thanks. All right. Any other questions or comments? Is everybody still stunned that education planning tables are no longer required?
That's going to be a hard one.
So
the evidence is still required, but it's just moved to the form. Citations. Yeah, you just moved it to that.
Yeah. What isn't required anymore is the content outline, you know, the columns on the table.
Yeah.
And so ANCC still requires evidence, but it the planning tables aren't required anymore. And I know people on our WNA committee have said that they will continue to use them because they can be very helpful. Linda creates a monthly report on enduring materials and follows up 3 to 6 months later with a survey to see how people are using information in practice. So Linda, that's a great way to do that. To the question that was asked earlier about what do we do with enduring materials as far as long-term evaluation. And the question about conflict of interest that just came in from somebody who missed that part of the call, nothing different with conflict of interest forms. So those will stay the same and still be, the conflict of interest form will still be very, very important in the activity record. I'm still kind of getting used to the getting used to using Adobe Connect. All right, I don't see any more chat questions. Anything else before we close? Again, these forms will be available on the WNA website as of July 31st. As you're planning your activities, any activity that you start planning after July 31st, you'll be able to pull these forms off the WNA website and use them. And I'm hoping that aligning with ANCC will simplify some things for you, and it really helps with standardization across the board as far as the states go. So big picture. Great.
And Mary Kay, just want to clarify, because I think my nurse planners will ask this, we really do not need to produce CVs, resumes, or bioforms for speakers or presenters.
You got it.
Okay.
And it is one that we weren't required to use learning objectives anymore, and two, we weren't required to have the CV information or the bio form for speakers in the activity record.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thanks for asking.
But I thought we do for the planners.
If your planner is a content expert, so bio forms are required for the planner of the activity.
Mm-hmm.
And if your planner is a content expert, if they have an X in this column, which is where this becomes very important, because then we know who should we be looking for as far as their bio information in your activity sample files. If they are a content expert, then they need a bio form. And I think I'm actually going to add
But if they're a presenter, they don't need it, and a CNE nurse planner doesn't need it, because you have a form that's asking that. On the bio data form.
Everybody needs a conflict of interest form, and your bio data forms are needed by your nurse planner for the activity, and your content expert on the planning committee.
But not the presenter, okay?
I know. We're all still trying to get over that.
Okay, and not the other planning committee members. Okay.
You are correct. I promise that is the case.
All right. I just gotta get used to it, like everyone else.
I know. And again, there's things that in our other hats, in my other hat, I will still continue to do, partly out of habit, partly because I think they're valuable, and partly because I want that information. These are just the things that, when we look at your activity records for this period of time, when you renew as a provider, we will be looking for this list that will be at the end of the form as the checklist. Okay? It's 1:00, so I need to let you go. Thank you so much for your time. And if you have questions, please contact me offline. And everybody have a great day.
Thanks.